Well, 1997, Throwback Thursday. Where were you? What were you up to? 71010 is the text line. Let us know. Include your name, too. We'll happy to shout you out. We get a moment to do exactly that. The number one movie in 1997 was not The Titanic. It was released at the very end of the year. That's why many people associate it there. But the number one movie was Men in Black.
We work for a highly funded yet unofficial government agency.
We'll take it from here.
Who the hell are you?
INS Division 6.
There is no Division 6.
Our mission is to monitor extraterrestrial activity on Earth.
You're all here because you're the best of the best, and we're looking for one of you.
Hey! What's up?
All right, I'm in.
From now on, you will have no identifying marks of any kind. You are no longer part of the system. We are the Men in Black.
You know what the difference is between you and me? I make this look good.
Yeah, so there you go, Will Smith. I did say the Oscar connection more to the face-slapping event of late.
I'm out here. Oh, there is. Richard. Wow. Will Smith just smacked the shit out of me.
I can't believe how he reacted to that. Keep your my wife's name out of your mouth, I believe, is what it was. So that's how we remember Will Smith today. Back in the day, they did win an Oscar. Thanks to Ben Harrison for saving me on that one. A little correction, best makeup. Also, they were nominated for best art direction and best original music or comedy score. Those categories no longer around. Now, I don't know if Faye and Karen have gone through this and figured out what we're up to yet, but the agreement is on Throwback Thursday, you got to share where you were on the year, even if it's a minus year for the younger folks. Karen Stintz, 1997, where were you? And I'm not going to ask your age, but I mean, saying everyone else is sharing, so why don't you?
I was 27. And so I wasn't married. I was footloose and fancy free and living in Toronto and working.
Pretty beautiful. Cool. Faye Johnstone, 1997.
I was 2 years old, and I believe I was hanging out in Gagetown, New Brunswick, because that's where little infant me was as my parents were working at the military base in Gagetown.
Very good. Faye Johnstone, co-owner and executive director, consulting firm Wisdom to Action. Karen Stintz, former city councillor and TTC chair, currently president and CEO of Variety Village and a federal conservative candidate. Thank you both for being here. We were talking about doom scrolling in bed before we got to this break here. The technology says that the blue light and all the things, we've known this stuff, is not good, but the algorithms get you sucked in. Faye, do you get sucked into this? What do you do about it? And is there one of these things that we should self-discipline, or how do we deal with this?
You know, I wish I was, I do fall for the doom scroll phenomenon more often than I'd like to admit. I think my bigger struggle is the work-life balance. And when you work on your phone, the instinct to just keep sending those work emails, no matter how late it gets, is a little bit too powerful for me. But I do try. I put my notifications on mute as of 9 p.m. every night. I try to shift away from the social media onto the book that I also read on my phone and use that to help me unplug from the busyness of social media chaos.
Karen, I suppose your own version of Faye's world about being on your phone, access to information and quickly matters. How do you deal with it? Because I'm starting to think that the second phone realm is going to be the only way to go here.
Yeah, no, it is true. But I mean, I also, Shane, I've got the benefit of being old. I get tired.
I get tired. Oh my God. We used to always joke in our family that nobody ever watched Law and Order. Everyone just saw the law part and fell asleep before the order happened.
Right. That's exactly what happened. And so there's no appeal for me to be on my phone after 9 o'clock because I'm just not productive, and I'm not going to reply to anything that makes any, you know, that I would want to read the next day. So I don't know. I think that's just the one. There's not many benefits to getting old. I think that's one of them.
It's a trap, though. I mean, it's the one thing, yeah. You open it up, you check the time, and then you see the email, and then all of a sudden, yeah, your brain fires, and off you go. Yeah, no, thanks for contributing to that. It was a great piece with Dr. Jeff Dater that we just talked about. And for anyone who missed it, we do have the podcast that comes out when the show is done. You can hear this entire hour. And if you know somebody who struggles with sleep, send it to them. And trust me, listening to Dr. Dater, like, he's so soothing anyway with his voice, which is pretty all right to go through too. I'm Shane Hewitt, filling in here on The Rush. Okay, refresher courses with Durham Police. Earlier on, we had a conversation to learn that these things are happening anyway, yet there's an article about it that's saying there's a refresher course that we... that is going to happen, even though it's supposed to happen every year. Anyway, Karen, sometimes messaging and optics are a good thing, but sometimes when you dig into it, you're like, they're happening anyway. What's the point? What's really happening here? To me, this raises more question marks than it does actually make everyone feel better, I think.
Well, you know, again, what I've learned in my life is that you take for granted that people have the same access to information or the same awareness about what's going on. And so I don't think there's anything wrong with advertising a refresher course is taking place, and that just to make sure everyone is aware, because we make so many assumptions, and you know what happens when you make assumptions, you make an ASS out of you and me.
You can say it. That's okay. We can get through with that. Well, Faye, what do you see here? I mean, again, the refreshers are good. That's all good news here, but they did, you know, it does get kind of positioned as a refresher when apparently they're scheduled to happen every year anyway. Does that build confidence, or is that a communication failure?
You know, I think there's a much longer conversation we'd have to have about me and confidence in police forces on a good day or a bad day. But I do think, you know, any transparency is good transparency, and giving folks access to more education and a refresher course couldn't be bad for us. It doesn't feel like it's the most like effective communication approach to reassure folks after what happens, but you know, it is something. I'd rather police share more than share less. So I'm kind of a meh on this one.
A solid meh. There you go. Faye Johnstone, Karen Stintz, Smart Speakers here. I'm Shane Hewitt. The Ford government is stepping into what I don't believe is their purview, except for protecting the school part. It should be a federal government conversation about protecting kids online, creating accountability against the media giants for some of the AI tools and how they get used. And I'm going to create an argument first this time on Smart Speakers, and I'm going to change the topic to change the clarity. If I have a building downtown and it gets vandalized with spray paint, it is my responsibility to get rid of the spray paint. If someone puts posters on my wall of my building, it's my responsibility to get those posters down. If they are of a hateful nature, it is even more my responsibility to make sure that it is expedited in that. Digitally, we do not have the same accountability. If it's my website and someone puts hate on it, nobody seems to care, even though it's my property. So it seems like the law doesn't get to a place where it respects property the same way as it does in real life. Fast forward here, Twitter, X, Snapchat, Facebook, all of the things, they need to be held accountable for what is going on. And it's a good thing that the Ford government is stepping into it, probably a drop in a bucket of help. Faye, what do you see?
I think it's going to be funny to watch how this is received in comparison to the Federal Online Harms Act. And I think it's going to put some conservatives in a bit of a bind as they have to, you know, probably try to not throw Ford under the bus while trying to throw Trudeau under the bus every step they can. I also think it's addressing an issue with a blunt approach, when what we really need here is more education for young people on literacy, on keeping themselves safe online, and empowering them to make healthy decisions in their online spaces. And I think that, you know, whatever we do here, the kids are going to find a way around it, because young folks are connected to their phones in a big way, and we're not going back from that anymore. And so we should find solutions that don't, you know, shove it into the shadows, but equip folks and young people with the tools to navigate these spaces.
If it's happening on a school Wi-Fi, then I say absolutely, province. There's got to be regulations there to hold the boards into account. Karen, what do you see?
Well, you know, what I see is that, you know, a great awareness of a problem that we don't know how to solve. And so, you know, each organization or level of government or institution, such as the TDSB, they're trying to do something to address a problem that we all agree is a problem in terms of how kids access social media and the harms that can be and the harms that ensue from that. But we don't know what to do. And so, you know, I think I think it's Ford has to do something to show that he cares about the situation. Whether it's going to be effective or not, I can't actually say. But I do think that through this trial and error approach, we're gonna work our way into some kind of solution that I don't think we actually have yet.
I hope that the we're so far behind on all things cyber generally in this country anyway, that I can't help to both Faye and Karen to say that at least the conversation is starting and in public, and whether it's misguided or lost or tangled up with other agendas, like you said, Faye, the fact that it's now happening in public, whereas before it was, nobody was doing it. Cyber attacks, cyber insurance, all of it is so grossly ignored in this country compared to what's going on in Europe that I guess I don't agree with much of it, but at the same time, I'm kind of going, well, it's something. So it's a start.
Yeah.
Isn't that terrible that as a society, that's where we get to, where we're like, well, that's something. And that's the win. Hi. All right. We'll continue with more smart speakers. Faye is here. Karen is here. I'm Shane Hewitt filling in on The Rush. Sugar Ray Fly, 1997, Throwback Thursday. Thanks for listening to The Rush. I'm Shane Hewitt. Smart speakers are here. The smarter people include Faye Johnstone and Karen Stintz. Faye is co-owner and executive director of consulting firm Wisdom 2 Action, with the number 2 squished in the middle there. Karen Stintz, former city councilor, TTC chair, currently president and CEO of Variety Village and federal conservative candidate. Thank you for being here and being a part of this. That's for sure. Okay, Loblaw. We had the food professor, Dr. Sylvain Charlebois, on, and we've been chatting with him about all things. We've been chatting with him about Mother's Day and spending. We've been chatting with him about wholesale and everything inside the food chain and where problems lie. And then publicly, there's a boycott. Now, this boycott seems to be targeted at Loblaw store only, not so much Loblaw the chain. Seems grossly misguided, but, you know, I do always ask the question, what are you going to do about it? It seems wildly ineffective, but at least people think they're doing something about it. Doesn't seem to be working. Faye Johnstone, how's your fridge? Is it full? And what are you worried about here?
You know, I think I'm supportive of the boycott. I'm not shopping at Loblaws. I see the amount of money that Galen Weston's racking in, and I know that there are other grocery stores that are locally owned that I can support instead. And, you know, we hear all of the time about how if we want to, you know, move towards a more sustainable, more equitable, a more fair economy, it has to be about consumer decision making. We have to choose where we spend our money, and this is individuals choosing not to spend their money on a corporation that's racking in big dollars. And so I think, you know, you can feel however you feel about it, but this is consumers executing their right to buy or not buy wherever they'd like to. And I do think the public conversation here is highlighting further the cost of living crisis, the cost of groceries, and indeed some corporations walking away with some good big money, while other folks who are not in those situations are struggling to make ends meet and pay those grocery bills.
Yeah, but Faye, I can't help but feel that's a little off topic, only because the fact that corporations making money, it's been proven, is actually mostly with not groceries and real estate. So is that more of a perspective on anti-corporate than it is on anti-grocery?
I think, I would say it could be both, but I stress, you know.
Fine. And if that's your look, then that's fine. I'm just trying to clarify, because it does come across to me as a little bit anti the man as opposed to the topic, which is food, because the food itself has been proven to be really not the issue here. Anyway, sorry, finish your thought. Didn't mean to walk on you there.
No, but, and you know, I'm not sitting in front of a graph looking at profit margins here by any means, but I do see the like public reporting of Loblaw profits, and I look at, I believe, the many mansions that are owned by the CEO, and so there is a conversation around wealth concentration that should be had here, and that is maybe a bit of a tangent, but my core really would be consumers have a right to execute their own discretion where they spend their money. And I will always, always support folks spending local, supporting small businesses, rather than going to a big chain in the first place.
I agree with Faye, Karen, about supporting local, using your dollar to have your vote. I agree with supporting the little guys. Not to be forgotten, though, is everybody who does work for the big guys. The profits are not centered necessarily in the food. They're centered in the business, and maybe the business now is just too big. What do you see here, Karen Stintz?
Yeah, I agree with more of that statement, that I think that what's being protested, I don't think is Loblaws necessarily, but the consolidation and the almost monopolistic approach that we now see with Loblaws Shoppers, No Frills, banking. Like, it just seems like the Westons own so much more of our lives. And, you know, I think that the decision to protest Loblaws is kind of a personal decision around, huh, okay, this is what I'm doing because this is what I can do in the face of not knowing what else to do. But it is ineffective. And to your point, I don't know that it's necessarily someone making too much profit because it's not on the food. It's on the other aspects of the business, as you mentioned. But I do think that there is a discussion that's worth having about whether or not the overreach, and I'm not going to say overreach, but just the how much Loblaws or how much the Weston family owns in certain markets, does that crowd out competition? And is it reasonable to expect more competition in certain areas? And then what do we do about that issue?
The scaling inside this, Faye, inside the business conversation, and I'm going to take your note about not having the charts of the data in front of you, so we don't expect anyone to have those numbers. That's not what this conversation is about. I think you're onto something when you say concentration, but when we look at other companies like Canadian Tire, Canadian Tire is doing exactly the same thing that is happening inside Loblaws, except we just don't see it the same way because it's not essential service driven like food would be. You know, they're an amazing company. They own the containers, they own the marks, they own the outdoor canoe place. They own Canadian Tire. They own the banking. They've owned all of it. But we don't complain about that one so much. This one lands in food. Are we just perceiving it to be differently, or maybe it's time to say, you know, diversify the portfolio so you don't own such an integral part of life?
And I think it is a convergence of a few factors, right? Like, the baseline here is folks are struggling to afford their groceries. And that is the underlying problem that I think is fueling the anger at Loblaws and all that. And it is a necessity. You know, I can't remember the last time I went to a Canadian Tire for anything, but, you know, the superstore of the Loblaws is right around the corner. And it is, you know, it's food. It's something that we always and will always need. And so I think it is, you know, it's not all on Loblaws, but I think they are a bit of a convenient target, and consumers are trying to make a point. And I will support the point that they're making, and again, support their right to choose where they spend their money.
Well, they do have that right. And again, that's where I land in the same place. And when we, Karen, just for the last word on this, I guess, is that when we look at this, the concentration in the food industry is incredibly strong in this. And Faye just said, like, a convenient target. And I think I agree with that. But I think it's a convenient target because of government narratives that they're the easy scapegoats. So we avoid the topics about why things are expensive to begin with.
Oh, I think you're 100% correct. And, you know, we're not dealing with the marketing boards. We're not dealing with the artificially high price of, you know, milk and eggs and everything else that are basics for families. And the fact that we don't have a competitive marketplace, those are real issues that are getting no airtime because of this, you know, what I believe to be, you know, this ridiculous grocery charter, whatever they want people to sign, which doesn't mean anything or do anything or help anything. If the government was really interested in lowering food prices, then they would have to make some major structural changes to the way food is produced and protected and marketed in this country.
Well, the fact that we can buy produce from countries very far away a lot cheaper than we can support that mm-hmm. little guy, Faye, that you talk about, right? Like, that's bothersome to me. And I think that that's the root when we look at why can't we just go buy our farmers' stuff because they're closer and at least pay the same price or a little bit more versus a lot more. Faye Johnstone, thank you for being here. Karen Stint, same to you. Always a pleasure. Appreciate you. I'm Shane Hewitt. Thank you very much for listening to Smart Speakers. Coming up for you next, we are going to get into the Leafs. And, oh boy, stand by.